Our Christ candle is lit this morning. The 250th mass shooting of this year happened as we slept. We burn the candle in our grief for those who have been slaughtered and in our grief for our country. This morning's lectionary reading comes from Psalm 107, and I'll be reading from the Inclusive Language Psalms. This psalm has a repeating refrain, which we will sing as would have been done in ancient times. You'll see it in your program. Oh, give thanks to God, for God is good. God's steadfast love endures forever. Let the redeemed of God say so, whom God has redeemed from trouble and gathered in from the lands, from east and from west, from north and from south. Some wandered in desert wastes, finding no way to a city to dwell in. Hungry and thirsty, their soul fainted within them. Then in their trouble, they cried to God, who delivered them from their distress and led them by a straight way till they reached a city to dwell in. Let them thank God for God's steadfast love, for God's wonderful works to humankind, for God satisfies the thirsty and fills the hungry with good things. God turns rivers into a desert, springs of water into thirsty ground, a fruitful land into a salty waste because of the wickedness of its inhabitants. Love is everlasting. God turns a desert into pools of water, a parched land into springs of water, and there God lets the hungry dwell, and they establish a city to live in. They sow fields and plant vineyards and get a fruitful yield.
Your love is everlasting.
They multiply greatly by the blessing of God, who does not let their cattle decrease. When they are diminished and brought low through oppression, trouble, and sorrow, God pours contempt upon princes and makes them wander in tactless wastes. But God raises up those who are needy out of affliction and makes their families like flocks.
Your love is everlasting.
The upright see it and are glad, and all wickedness stops its mouth. Whoever is wise should give heed to these things. Let people consider the steadfast love of God.
Your love is everlasting.
Last Sunday, Laura and I traveled separately to El Paso to join with faith leaders from the Muslim, Jewish, and Christian traditions in calling attention to the morally wrong, way in which refugees, asylum seekers, and immigrants are being treated by the U.S. government. The group was led by the Reverend Dr. William Barber, whose organization, Repairers of the Breach, has organized a Moral Mondays movement. Moral Mondays are meant specifically to call people of faith to action for social justice. As Reverend Barber would say, if you're sitting in your pews on Sunday praising God, and on Monday supporting a system that oppresses the poor, you're not doing it right. Laura made it to El Paso earlier than I, so while she joined in person, I benefited from Wi-Fi and live streaming in the airport. I heard immigrants and refugees share the stories that drove them to cross the border. I learned about the Border Network for Human Rights, an amazing group that organizes local resources and people to educate, protect, and engage the local community in El Paso. I heard a former Border Patrol agent speak about her shame at working for a system that treated human beings with so little regard. I heard her despair at how time has only brought worsening conditions and worsening treatment. I heard songs and calls to speak out. And I heard hope from Reverend Barber, Imam Suleiman, Rabbi Jacobs, and other faith leaders. The night was meant to remind us why we gathered, to encourage us to speak out, and to create solidarity of purpose within our group. It was prophecy and church and temple and mosque. On Monday morning, though, the air was different. The ethos was different. We spent Monday morning in a mandatory training session. Here's what arrest might look like in El Paso. Here's what jail looks like. Tell the judge about your medical needs. Tell the judge about your vacation plans. Tell the judge about dietary restrictions. El Paso is a poor town, and it doesn't have the resources to jail a lot of people for misdemeanors. At least that's what we were told. The jail support wing of our group assured us that they would remain with us every step of the way, and they would be there to greet us with food and love once we were released. I've not been arrested before, believe it or not. And I'm not foolish enough to think that jail wouldn't bother me. But the weird wrinkle in the air felt like more than just my personal fear. Now, to be clear, there was not an expectation from our organizers that every person in the room was going to be arrested. Success wasn't going to be measured in how many arrests were made. Rather, we were all there to bear moral witness. We were there to, for a moment, just for a moment, to join in solidarity with the detainee, the refugee, the justice worker, and the child. Into this odd atmosphere of hope and purpose and questions and worries, Reverend Barber and the other faith leaders entered. Reverend Barber asked us a new question, a question we hadn't heard before. Would we trust him? Would we trust our leadership? Would we trust the local people? Would we set aside whatever we thought our plans were and follow a new path? Yes, we would. He told us that we would be wise as serpents, innocent as doves, that we would move together as one, that we would listen to instructions, that we would obey directives, and that we would not allow our moment on Monday to jeopardize the larger movement in El Paso and at the border. So, having made the commitment to move as one, together, we got on buses and we drove to the El Paso Processing Center, part of the Department of Homeland Security. A small group blocked the access road to the center with a big sign that said simply, "Stop killing people." A larger group of clergy gathered at the entrance gate. The gate was already closed on our arrival, but we gathered there nonetheless and we prayed together as our faith leaders spoke prayers of rebuke and warning and hope. They called for justice and humanity in the name of the God who has so many names. And they told the people inside that we were here. If only for a moment, we were here. After a few minutes, our safety marshals loudly called for us to move out of the street and onto the sidewalks. As one, we moved, and with chants of forward together, not one step back, we walked in pairs back to our starting point. We gathered again and prayed, and then ever the wise leader, Reverend Barber, told us why the morning had shifted so strangely. The local groups in El Paso had warned us that should we block the processing center and refuse to move when asked, we would be at risk of being arrested and charged with federal conspiracy rather than a Class B misdemeanor in Texas. Wise as serpents, Reverend Barber said, wise as serpents and innocent as doves. What good does it do for the movement if the story is about a bunch of clergy fighting federal conspiracy charges? Would we still be helping, or would we be grandstanding? So we listened. We were disciplined, we were respectful, and we were a moral witness shining light into a dark and isolated place. We didn't fix anything or solve any problems on Monday. The problems aren't ours to solve. They're ours to identify. It's not okay that children are still being separated from their families. It's not okay that detainees are given frozen burritos to eat. It's not okay that ICE can enter a workplace and rip a family in half. It's not okay that the undocumented have no choice but to work in an underground, cash-only community, risking abuse and exploitation because no other path is available to them. It's not okay. But, strangely, irrationally, I do have hope. I have hope because I got to witness Jews and Muslims and Christians and whatever the heck we are gather together to demand justice, because God demands justice. I have hope because there's an essence that permeates the borderlands, that sits with the detainee, that swims in the river and lays on the shore, that tries to eat a frozen burrito, that simply holds all of it right here and right now and won't let the suffering be alone. I don't have a better word for it than God. So God is already there, and there's nothing that we can do to make that any more true than it always already is. We must shine light. We must educate ourselves and our friends. We must demand justice, and we must keep doing it over and over and over. No, we don't have to go to the border. We don't have to march. We don't have to write or preach. There's no single best way. But we must do the work that is ours to do. A faith community that sits idly by while refugees and asylum seekers and immigrants continue to be mistreated is a community whose faith is dead. What gives me hope is seeing justice work in so many people here, in this room, and in El Paso, even when the markers for justice are fleeting and can seem so small. We can hold on to that hope. We can be as wise as serpents and as innocent as doves as we continue to do the work that is ours to do.
I spent my time in El Paso crying, singing, and shouting. In the days since returning to Houston, I've been seeking words for my tears. I have the words of the songs and the words for the shouting, but the tears are harder to collect into nouns and verbs. I had never seen Texas west of Brownwood. I had no idea that El Paso and Juarez are the same city, as connected as Memphis and Arkansas and Memphis and Tennessee. Driving down the interstate from the airport to the church for Sunday's mass meeting, El Paso stretched out on one side and Juarez stretched out on the other. Land on one side, now called Texas, that was once called Mexico. Land on the other side that remains Mexico. Both called good on that third day of creation. The blazing sun felt alarmingly close. Through squinting eyes, I took in the beautiful mountains and the brown earth of desert. I thought of people traveling in the heat, of the desperation it would take to walk miles and miles, of the exhaustion and the hope for safety. I found a seat in the sanctuary preparing for the mass meeting. I saw Rabbi Oren Hayon of Congregation Emmanuel and Reverend Wayne Larson of Christ the King Lutheran, two familiar Houston faces in a sea of liturgical garb and street clothes. On the wall to the right of the pulpit hung dried chili peppers, a symbol as important as the cross in that place. The meeting began with a prayer. The refrain of the prayer was, "How long, O Lord, how long? How long will children be separated from their parents? How long will people be kept in freezing conditions, sleeping on the concrete? How long, O Lord, how long? How long will people be denied basic human decency and dignity, not given a toothbrush? How long? How long will we permit the government to force people to drink from toilets? How long?" The meeting continued, a two-hour worship service with sermons from imams and rabbis and reverends. These sermons were punctuated by testimonies. Most of the testimonies were offered in Spanish. My high school Spanish provided a haunting shorthand before the translation. I could understand words like hungry, frozen, and pain. I didn't need a translator to comprehend the tears of the mother trying to protect her son. I know, and you know, that there are real people with names and families suffering, held by our government, and knowing this did not prepare me to hear and to see Rigoberto, Alex, Sonata, Hermelinda, and Margarita. We heard about hunger strikes, of a five-year-old boy inside the facility. Who tried to hang himself with his own shoelaces. Of children as young as four cutting themselves. Despair and desperation. Not somewhere else, but here. Not done by someone else, but done in our name. People given frozen food they cannot eat. Sleeping on concrete, not given a way to clean themselves. Separated from their children, separated from their parents. Reverend Dr. William Barber talked about his two dogs. how he gives them special bones to keep their teeth clean, how he keeps them brushed, how he makes sure that they're not too hot and not too cold, his dogs. Alex and his testimony said, we are not animals to be treated like this. After the meeting, I found my hotel room. Gratitude that I knew where my children were and they were safe. Gratitude that I had a bed and comfort, that no one would be coming in the night to take me or my loved ones. And weeping anguish for each person denied such basic human needs. Gratitude and anguish, anger and determination. This same anguish and determination flooded over me this morning when I learned of a second major mass shooting in less than 24 hours in our country, killing 9 and injuring 26 in less than a minute. The anguish of yesterday as news came in of a mass shooting in El Paso. At least 20 people are dead and many more are wounded. And now we're learning that the anti-immigrant nationalism and anti-Hispanic racism spurred this murderous rampage. Some of those who were slaughtered in El Paso yesterday were Mexican citizens, and some were citizens of the United States. And no matter where they called home, they can never return home again. Surely the language used by our leaders to describe people seeking to enter this country and the way our government treats these children of God holds some blame for these murders. We cannot imagine words to have no effect. And so we must add our words, words of peace, words of righteousness, words of welcome to the cacophony of xenophobia and racism. And not words alone, but our actions. They must match our words. Monday morning after our training, we took buses to a vacant lot, and from that gathering point, we marched along the high fence of the detention center to the access gate. More than 500 people of faith from all over. I met a woman from New Hampshire and another from Ohio. I sat next to a man from New Mexico and heard Canada called out when we were saying where we were from. All of us gathered. All of us singing and shouting. I knew the people held on the other side of the fence could not see us, but could they hear us? Could they hear our cries for justice? Did they know we care? Did they hear the horns blaring in support? Did they know, even if for just a moment, that they're not alone? We asked to make a pastoral visit to the people being detained. The facility had already been closed to any visitors, a move made as soon as we began walking. And so we cried and shouted and sang. As Barber said, we came to bear moral witness in freedom's name. And so we did. In freedom's name, and with your names like a mantle over our shoulders, we bore witness, and now we must continue. Somebody's hurting our family, and it's gone on far too long, and we won't be silent anymore. Amen.